Welcome back to the Hotspot Podcast. I'm Dr. Jillian Hotz, here at the Miami Project to Cure Paralysis at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. I'm also the director of the Kids Neuroscience Center. And what we talk about on this podcast is things that make our kids healthier, our kids safer, and our communities better than what they are today. To kick off 2025, I have a very distinguished guest with me who really doesn't need any introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway. Dr. Barth Green, Executive Dean of Global Health and Community Service, Chairman of the Miami Project to Cure Paralysis, Professor of Neurological Surgery, Neurology, Orthopedics, and Rehabilitation Medicine, University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. And there's a whole much more information that you're going to glean from this conversation today with Dr. Barth Green. And since you've been my mentor, since I walked into the University of Miami in 1992, friend, colleague, actually the first person I really met, which was in the old rehabilitation building, and I'm sure we're going to talk about the new rehab center today. But because we're so interested in brain injury and spinal cord injury, and you've got such a huge spectrum of experience, I thought we should just kick off the discussion today with things that happened in the past, things that are important in the present, and then maybe, you know, we'll come back to what you see in this new technology advanced world of what we're seeing in the future. So maybe, you know, that's a good place to start. And then if you want to do any intro, that would be great too.
Jillian, it's a pleasure to be with you today. You are obviously one of the most important people of my life. Why is that? It's because of your impact on our society, especially to me, the most important citizens, who are the children, the youth of America, and more focused, the youth of South Florida and beyond.
Thank you for that. You know, let's maybe go into a little bit of the past, because you have such a huge knowledge of what was going on, you know, maybe in the 60s, 70s, 80s in brain injury rehabilitation and injury prevention. Like, what did you really see that started to happen after World War II, and then sort of that brought us to, like, where we are in some of our policies today?
Well, unfortunately, the whole subject of head injury and concussion affected my life way back in the 60s when I played high school football, even against Dick Butkus, who would run out of the backfield. I'd be the linebacker, I'd tackle him, and 2 minutes later he'd score a touchdown and sort of flip me off his shoulder. And we became friends after that. Our coaches were best friends, and in those days I probably suffered about one or two concussions a week because of being 130 pounds and playing against people like Dick Butkus, who were two or three times my weight. So what I learned at that time is that cardboard helmets without face masks were not a very good safety tool, and that concussions had a toll in the short term and in the long term. Fast forward to today, there isn't a day in my career or my life where I don't encounter someone who suffered the consequences of anything from a very minor concussion to a very major brain injury. So there's no doubt that what you do with your KidSafe program and the whole myriad of components, the walk safe, run safe, skate safe, ride safe, all of these things together have an enormous impact on the hundreds of thousands of children who play sports in Florida and beyond every day and actually modify their behavior because of your program. your mantra, which is safe, and that's so important in our lives because there's nothing more precious than our children, our youth, our grandchildren. And so we know that what happens today affects tomorrow. Someone very smart taught me, the past is history, the future a mystery. Each day is a gift. That's why we call it the present. So when we talk about brain injuries, concussions, no one ever initially talked about prevention. They just talked about consequences. Now today, we realize we can prevent the majority of those injuries with some simple teaching, not just to the athletes themselves, but to their coaches, their trainers, their parents, the people that make up the village that is surrounding sports and activities of daily life, like walking, like skating in their own neighborhoods. So the impact of what KidSafe does is just extraordinary. It gives me goosebumps thinking about the lives you touch every day, no matter where you are. It's your mantra. And for that, I'm blessed to be your friend.
Wow. I mean, thank you for those wonderful words. And from your sort of heart, I know it's sort of really how you feel. Yeah, you are right. We're out there every day, whether we're in a school or a football field, even an ice rink, trying to, talk to coaches, athletic trainers, parents, the athletes themselves about how to play the sports they love safer. I think what's really changed, for me, Barth, over the years that I've been here and, in the field of study of, brain injury and prevention is some of the things around that. Maybe not so much our medicine and our practice. I mean, yes, we have some better markers now to look at mild brain injury and technologies faster, and some better drugs. But maybe the equipment, the rule changes, the NFL actually talking about concussion protocol. I think that's really helped the discussion when it starts at the top and then it does come down to our youth leagues. Because what does every little kid want to be? They want to be, that NFL player or that college player. So, in the last 30 years, do you see sort of, the technology, the helmet changes, the rule changes helping us decrease these brain injuries?
There's no doubt that every decade since I became involved in sports in the 50s and 60s, there's been major changes in the rules, but it's not just football. Every single sport, professional, collegiate, high school, impacts these children, these youth, who eventually carry the consequences to their end of their life, as evidenced by some of the top people in sports. Hall of Famers in all the different sports have become demented, disabled in a tremendous way, and developed neurological consequences because we didn't realize when they were playing that the harder you hit, the better you were, isn't a good mantra. So this is what it's all about, modifying behavior. And there isn't a sport. I mean, we're involved with equestrians. We're involved with, flats races, with jumping, with polo. All those sports have a high risk of injury to the brain. We're involved with motorsports. Everything you can imagine, from small vehicles to off-road racing to the Baja 1000, we're intimately involved with safety and injury prevention in all of these mantras. In sports and water sports and racing and skiing and kite flying, all the different things that people do. The military, how many hundreds of thousands of soldiers, just in the U.S., not to mention globally, millions have been impacted by sitting next to a weapon, a cannon, a torpedo, all the different weapons that explode.
Blast.
And nobody worried about these blast injuries and how they affected their brain in the short term and long term, and the cumulative effects on their neurons and nervous system. So this is all part of it. There's really no limit to what we're learning and what we can learn about these injuries. So it's exciting to be here with you. It's exciting to see somebody yourself who's a pioneer in something that nobody ever thought about, and that is prevention, safety. And that's what is so important today, is I have children and grandchildren who still participate in these sports. And every day when they go out, what do I worry about? What you developed, prevention, concussion prevention, head injury prevention. Extremely important, and it's on the top of my list.
Yeah. So, yeah, we do definitely want to see helmets on kids when they're learning how to ride. We definitely want to see, you know, everybody educated about how to play their sport safer. Parents knowing this, you know, signs and symptoms of concussion, and the athletic trainers we train and the coaches we train. So it really, as you said, it does take a village. And, you know, here in the Miami-Dade County community and South Florida, we've really, you know, done a really good job on the dissemination, you know, nationally. We're working on that. There's challenges to that coming into different systems and school board systems. You know, they do have their protocols in different states. But we like to see now that hopefully across the states, especially with high school sports and youth sports, that there is protocols in place for concussion management. And then you have medical providers in those communities that are experts in, you know, manage this. And I think we've done a really good job, as you said, you know, in this last decade of, you know, opening up Pandora's box and really sort of trying to, like, deal with this issue. And I know we do it here at the Miami Project on a daily basis with brain and spinal cord injury. And I think there's many other centers now that, you know, are doing the same in urban communities. And as you know, we're very involved with our tribal communities here in South Florida as well. We have projects over at the Miccosukee Reservation, working with that community now, trying to improve their bikeability, walkability programs with them. We've got a state grant, which we were very fortunate to get. So we want to remember not just urban, but also rural communities.
Right. And you're sitting in an environment at the University of Miami and Jackson Health System where there's a major focus on prevention. You've got partners in the Gordon Simulation Center, the largest of its type in the world, that has simulation setups for mass shootings, for explosions, for fire, for earthquakes, for other natural and man-made disasters. And you're right next to the largest, most acclaimed trauma center in the world, the Ryder Trauma Center, which has a layman injury research center as an intimate part of its programs. So we're sitting here in a very rich environment that allows us to not only do teaching and prevention education, as we discussed earlier, but also research in hypothermia in initial treatments. We're developing devices that can be applied at the time of a concussion to minimize the damage. We're developing new designs and equipment and technology to prevent head and neck injuries and spinal cord and paralysis. So this is an exciting time. It's a time, as we said, full of goosebumps. Anybody who doesn't get excited when they see this churning around us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and prevention and treatment, primary, aggressive, first responders. Every year on this campus, we train thousands, not hundreds, but thousands of first responders from around the world, from the military, from the civilian, EMTs, and different individuals who go all over the world, like our team at the Global Institute, who who actually deploy with Southcom all through the Caribbean, through this hemisphere, and do disaster management, training, prevention, mental health programs. We know that KidSafe really focuses on the mental wellness of the patients and their families. This is a bi-generational issue. You can't just work with kids and youth, but you've got to work with their parents in order to be effective at what you're doing.
So you brought up something that we should, you know, sort of mention is we are here at the University of Miami-Jackson Memorial Health System campus. I've been here, you know, my whole career, and so have you as a young resident. And the thing now is that when I think back on Jeff Augenstein, who was the director of the Ryder Trauma Center with Bill Lehman. Let's give Bill Lehman a shout out because it was Bill Lehman, our congressman, who did do the first book on injury prevention for trauma and National Highway Traffic Safety, sort of followed suit in some of the work that they did and the funding they did looking at mechanism of injury in cars. And I know Jeff spent a lot of his career looking at that. And that's when I really got excited about this, being at Ryder, seeing these kids coming in. And then Steve Cohen, the director at the time, called me into the trauma center when this four-year-old kid from Liberty City came in. And he said to me, like, what are you doing for kids with brain injury that are this young? And I said, well, really, Steve, I'm only really seeing people over 18. And he said, well, that changes today. And so then, you know, we came to talk to you and you said, that changes today. We have to make sure we have a seamless system from coma to community. And, you know, that's what we built here. And I guess, you know, I'm so proud of the programs that we have here and the management that we have on the trauma side. So, you know, thanks for bringing that up. And definitely a shout out to people like Bill Lehman and Jeff Augenstein for also realizing the importance of these programs that we needed. And then, you know, we had people like John Caluse. I'm, you know, looking at him now, a pediatric critical care doc that was really interested in animal research, who then we got him to become, you know, the director of the pediatric brain injury program. And then, of course, Kester, you know, Kester ran, you know, the biggest neuro rehab program here for years. And him and Phil Villanueva taught me really almost everything I know about managing these people, talking to their families, and trying to have our best outcomes ever. So, you know, I do have to remember these people because this is why I was able to achieve what I did, of course, under always your support and the Department of Neurosurgery and the Miami Project. So I really want to thank you for that also.
You don't have to thank me for anything. You have to thank God that we're able to do this and we're in a position to be able to change lives. And that's the most inspiring part of your programs, Kids Safe. Not only do we prevent injury, but we prevent the sequela. We minimize the impact on the patients, their families, the community. Yep. That's a very important part, to make sure they get reintegrated into the community. And they learn alternatives. If they aren't going to be going to play football after multiple concussions, there are other sports where they can be equally invigorated and challenged that we need to tell them about. We need to educate. And that's the most important part.
And education. Our partnerships, right. And the partnerships like you're talking about, like the school board, we're partners with Public Works. We're you know, the partnership we have with Parks and Rec, the TPO, the MPO, these, you know, police department. These are all the E's that we need for our model of injury prevention, you know, the 6E model. And so then we bring it here to the university, we do the education, we do the evaluation, and then, you know, we have these evidence-based programs. So, you know, it's a lot of partners working together, and we've been together for a really long time. So there's a commitment by this community to do this work.
Yeah, I think the community has welcomed us. There's no doubt there's politics in science, in research, in clinical care, insurance industry. You go on and on. There's not a part of our lives that aren't affected in some way by politics. But when you're dealing with children, somehow the doors open and eyes and minds open, and people are always more receptive and supportive. And that's the important thing. They know that the future of the world is in the hands of the children.
So just to wrap up, you know, I'm sure people ask you this question all the time, but I'm going to ask it also. When you look back at your career full circle and you see all the wonderful things you've done, and now you're, you know, building the Global Institute and all your humanitarian work. And, you know, we've been, of course, all the work you've done in Haiti before the earthquake, after the earthquake, continuing to do, and some of the work you're doing around the world. Like, what would you say maybe one or two of your fondest memories of some of the work that you've done?
I think the greatest privilege of a physician, one that everybody aspires to but few can really, we are using technology that was researched, was documented as effective, efficient, and became FDA approved and is now integrated into the healthcare system, not only in Miami and America, but around the world. So changing the practice of medicine is a real privilege. And I can say, I didn't do it, but the Miami Project has, and you're part of that. And for that, I think that's my most proud accomplishment.
I'm going to ask you probably one last question. You know, everybody's talking about machine learning, AI, building models for, you know, some of the work that we're doing, whether it's in brain injury, spinal cord injury. What are your thoughts about this tool? Does it have a place in our lives to come?
Not only does AI have a place, but it has an important role in the future. Everything is vulnerable to mistakes and errors if people are making decisions and determinations themselves and ignoring technology. So AI offers the opportunity to be more accurate, to be more concise, and to have more support for what you're doing. So yes, I 100% believe that AI is part of our future as far as, you know, people accomplishing their goals in their lives, organizations being effective and impactful, and nations being able to produce what they are capable of and be successful economically, socially, and in every sense. AI is a part of mental health. It's a part of every part of our life, and I definitely embrace it and believe it's got to be carefully utilized. It's not something that should be rampant and uncontrolled, but it's something that can be rebooted into making us much more than we ever were capable of being in the past.
Well, I think that was a really good ending to our discussion today. I want to really thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything we've built here together at the university and Jackson Memorial Health System, and for all your sharing of experience and wisdom with not only me, but our whole community here. And I think that it's going to be hard to beat this podcast, but I'm sure I'll find some guests in the future that can reflect on other areas that we need to discuss. So I just want to thank you today for being with us on this podcast, Barth. And I want to tell our audience, thanks for listening to the Hotspot Podcast. I want you to stay tuned and stay safe.